Well, here we go. Imagine if Philadelphia had lost.
Yeah. Are they won? Jeez, that's too bad.
I'm looking at the pictures coming out of Philadelphia overnight, and holy Toledo. Imagine if they had lost. But anyway, they outplayed the Patriots, and the Patriots lost. But we'll talk about that. We'll talk about other things. We'll talk about some high school hockey and other things as well, as you're listening to North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. And hello, I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. He's the other voice, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And, of course, the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell. Let's kill the music here. We're going to have pretty much sort of the same lineup we've been having, with an exception here and there, and that's because of the hockey situation. I've been doing hockey this winter, and a couple of teams just keep on winning and doing very well. Congratulations to Newburyport. They won a big game over the weekend, and they are in the top eight. Let's see here. I'm trying to get over to the standings. Danvers continues to win. Beverly, a tie game out on Friday. Now, I'm going to talk Beverly coach Justin Scherz about the road trip out west. So they did tie Westfield, and then they stayed for the, I think it was BU-UMass game.
Right, yeah.
So see how that went. We'll also talk with Danvers coach Steve Baldessari. Not sure about Coach Paul Yamin in Newburyport. We'll give him a jingle. And also Gary Larrabee wants to talk sports. He wants to talk Celtics, Bruins, probably Patriots, as well as some golf tonight. And we're going to try to check in with Nick Kukuru. He's at a basketball game tonight, so I'm not sure we'll be able to make connections, but we're going to give it a shot. So let's go to what is on your mind, Coach. I guess the thing you and I were talking before we went on the air about the Patriots-Philadelphia game.
Yeah, like I said, you know, I barely read any of the papers. I didn't listen to any of the radio today. Well, during the day, on my way here, I happened to put on both stations, and the ranting and raving and the kvetching that was going on was just too much. And, you know, on one of the stations, I heard them talking about, you know, conspiracy theories that you know, Belichick deliberately blew the game to get back at Brady and Kraft for having to trade Garoppolo. And I'm like, okay, that's enough. Okay. Philadelphia played a better game, plain and simple.
Put a little closer. There you go.
They outcoached us.
That's good.
You know, not by much, because, you know, we put 33 points up, and but the defense just could not get it done. It got exposed like it got exposed in the first four games of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure the people in Detroit were very happy seeing the guy who was going to be coming in as head coach. All of a sudden, the last game of the season, most important game of the season, just looks just like the first game of the season when they got waxed. And we want to wish Matt Patricia great success at Detroit, and thank him for all that he brought to the Patriots while he was here. You know, he was the part of three Super Bowls, and you know, not many guys have the opportunity to say that. So you know, we wish him well. He should do well. He's a very bright coach, and it'll be interesting to see if he decides to be the head coach and defensive coordinator, or will he hand it off to somebody else and just sort of add in as he feels necessary, a la Bill Belichick. I just don't think, you know, second half they made some adjustments, but Philly just kept refusing to die, refusing to fold, they refused to blink, and you got to give him credit. And Foles did not fold. He stayed calm. He got his reads. He got his receivers open. He got the ball to him. And you have to congratulate them. You know, as much as it hurts, because we have one of the teachers at Gloucester High in the history department is from Philadelphia.
Pete Cook.
And he went home for the occasion. So
well, I haven't heard.
We're not sure he's going to be back, even by probably Wednesday.
Haven't heard from my daughter either. She was saying that down at Drexel, should the Flyers, should the Eagles win, there weren't going to be any classes today. So
right.
I haven't heard from her. I don't know. But
well, they cancel school tomorrow for the parade as well.
Just imagine what kind of riots and stuff would have gone on had they not won. But my thing is that, Tim, I, you know, we talked about this too. Everybody, as you said, kvetching about this, that, and the other thing. Sports talk radio 24/7, just like the news. It's It doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work for me because you got a lot of people. In fact, even the build-up to the game, Tim, I've said this time and again, all these, there are so many of these so-called sports hosts on Boston radio who don't know anything about sports.
No, I listened to none of the build-up. I watched none of the build-up all week. Because, again, like I said, there are so many talking heads that never played that it's just their opinion, like two guys that sit in the afternoon on one of the stations. And it's like, and they're so anti-Patriots, anti-Brady, anti-Belichick. And it's like, well, if you hate us that much, why don't you go to a city where you like the team, you like the owner, you like the quarterback, you like the coach, and go talk about those guys. Because, you know, to listen to these guys, the negativity that these guys, you know,
spew. But there's an audience for that,
yeah,
and I'm not in that audience.
And I'm not part of it.
No.
I hear it, and I just change the
My thing is, as a longtime sports fan, you know, I grew up before all this stuff, and I used to read. I read everything about sports.
Yeah.
You know, you read biographies, you read Sports Illustrated, Sporting News, you read Hockey Digest, you read everything, Sport Magazine. You read everything, and then you listen to it on the radio, and then television came along all the time, and you watch it on television, and you continue. And to me, the entertainment that the New England Patriots have brought over the last 17 years, it just outweighs everything else in terms of any losing that they have or any bad plays. It just outweighs everything. And the fact that we have witnessed yesterday was one of the greatest performances, in my opinion, in any championship game in sports history by Tom Brady.
Well,
that
you know,
was both, phenomenal.
You know, it's funny. You'd have thought that Foles threw for more than 375 yards and three touchdowns because he threw it all over the field. And, I mean, the total offense was over 1,200 yards. Both teams had over 600 yards of offense in a Super Bowl.
That was fun to watch.
Where defenses tend to dominate, and the vaunted Philly, you know, defense, you know, had one more defense had the biggest defensive play at the most critical time.
Yep.
We had that, you know, the interception, but they got in crunch time. They got the turnover.
That's critical because the Patriots didn't make the big play in defense this time, and if you look back, except for one year, Tim. Except for one year, the Patriots have never dominated anything or anybody. They win. They always win. But they've not been dominant. And this time, they didn't win. Okay.
No, and
better team beat them.
Statistically, you know, you go, wow, that's a dominant performance. Yeah, but and I was telling a friend of mine that I met on the way here tonight getting a coffee, it never felt like they were in command of the game.
No, they were. Well,
in
obviously
the past,
they weren't.
Even though they were close games, you felt that they were in command, that things were going their way. And yet this time, because of Philly's ability to continually respond to when the Patriots made their run, Philly had a response.
To me, the biggest thing that made me feel that way, exactly as you say, was the entire game, no pressure on Foles. Usually, they don't have anything in the first half, but by the fourth quarter, they've got it dialed up.
I think they only had
nothing.
One sack, I think, if that.
I'm not even sure they did, but they, I don't think so because Collinsworth said first sack was the strip sack, first sack of either team. So I don't think the Patriots got one, but they didn't get any pressure. But you know what? It doesn't take the shine off for me, Coach. That if this is it, you know, whether the team breaks up or whatever, and they come back to the pack, man, I'm a happy camper because
I don't think
it's been amazing. I don't think so either, but who knows? You know, and what Brady did showed. Done? He's nowhere near done if he wants to continue. But I think here's the problem, Tim, like you know with so many other athletes. In order to maintain that, as you get older, it gets harder and harder, and you have to work at it more and more, which means you have to sacrifice family time more and more, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think somehow that I think he has managed to make that work. I know we all know that Giselle wants him to retire, especially for his own health. The number of hits that he takes in the course of a game, you know, he's escaped the concussion protocol because he's such a smart guy. He sees the hits coming. He simply, you know, he curls up and he rolls away and he doesn't take the full threat. Though the first shot he took in the stomach area, that was a pretty good shot. That sent him back off his feet. I think it was the same play that Cook got hurt on, which I thought was a really cheap jump, but because he was running with the ball and he's a runner and not a receiver.
You know,
but he was pretty defenseless. I mean, he was turning around.
Wasn't
he had no idea that
I
was
go
coming.
Back to spearing. Wasn't that spearing at one time? You lead with your helmet. That guy led with his helmet. Okay, he got part of the shoulder. But you know where he was shooting for.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, whatever.
But, you know, it's will he have the weapons back? You can see all those weapons coming back. You're going to have a healthy Edelman next year who's going to be just chomping at the bit. The game was no sooner over, and Vegas had already posted the line for next year's Super Bowl. And guess who's favored? Not the Eagles. The
okay.
Patriots.
I didn't know that.
They've already established the Pats as the favorite to win the Super Bowl simply because the pissed off factor.
Okay, well.
And if Brady at 40
who knows?
Throws 500 plus yards, what's he going to do at 40?
MVP of the league.
See,
and
that was the kiss of death.
Oh, of course. It happens all the time. And you look at that
third
list.
Third time in a row.
You look at that list, only one league MVP has ever won the Super Bowl.
Third time in a row for Brady. Every time he's won the MVP, they've lost the Super Bowl.
Okay,
if I was him, I would say take my name out of consideration.
Well, okay, so we'll come back. We'll talk with Beverly High School hockey coach Justin Shares. This is MSO News Sports. This is North Shore Sports Night.
We're a little out of order, eh? Is it suddenly 7:40 or just moving them up?
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student-athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Stronger, faster, tougher. When you need the MVP of community banks, look no further than the Institution for Savings, with 14 full-service offices throughout the North Shore. We have MVP rates and an all-star team to serve you. Bank from the ball field with our 24/7 online application apps, internet banking, mobile deposit, and more. Institution for Savings, your winning team. Visit institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, we're back now with Beverly High School hockey coach Justin Shares, and as luck would have it, we've been covering Beverly for the last few weeks. They've had some pretty big games, mostly at the Bork Arena. But, Coach, first of all, welcome back.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Good. We're glad you're here. And the thing is, when we talked last week, you guys were getting ready for a game 2 days after the Wednesday game, and that was a hell of a game against Danvers. Let's talk a little bit about that first. What did you guys get out of that game, Coach?
The Danvers game was a good confidence boost for us. They're definitely the cream of the crop in Division II North, so to be able to compete with them and control the game at times was good for the boys to see that we can play at that level.
You know, there was just one little, I'm not going to call it a breakdown, but it was a surge by Danvers in the third period. I think like for the first 5 minutes they got those three goals, and that was a difference in the game. Other than that, your guys stood toe-to-toe with them.
Yeah, that three-minute lapse there, you know, they made some great plays, and I think we were running around a little bit, and they sensed that, which great teams have a tendency to do, and they pounced. So other than that, I was proud of the way the boys played.
You know, Coach, the first couple of minutes of the third went much like the second period, a lot of tight checking, a lot of pucks getting knocked around, and then at about the three-minute mark, it just seemed like the whole ice opened up. And, of course, that's where Davis excels, and they grab those goals, and all of a sudden it closed again. But just that one window enabled them to get the goals they needed.
Yeah, yeah, and they do a great job with their speed, pushing transition, and you know, they're so skilled moving the puck that they took advantage of a little bit of a lapse on our part, and you know, like I said, great teams typically do that, so you know, hats off to them.
How much do your kids trust your goaltender coach? Because I thought he had a tremendous game, even though you guys came up a goal short.
Yeah. Troy's been around for a long time. He's a four-year player for us. You know, he started as a freshman out of necessity, but he's developed into one of the better goaltenders in the league. So, yeah, they have a lot of confidence in him.
All right, now let's get to the road trip. You guys went out to UMass on Friday, and thanks for the report. We had that posted. It was great to get the story up there so quickly. But tell us about the road trip and the game, and then what you guys did after the game.
So we went out to UMass. We started off the day with a bit of a mistake. The coach bus we had booked broke down in the parking lot as we were trying to leave the high school.
Oh, no.
We got off on the wrong foot there. We ended up leaving an hour and a half later than we wanted to, and we put ourselves at the rink like 20 minutes before the puck dropped, which, you know, after a two-hour bus ride, it's tough to get rolling that quickly. Westfield ended up actually scoring on their first shot of the game, and then we held them for the rest of the game to nothing. So we had plenty of opportunities, too. We had, I think, five breakaways in the game, a couple posts. So it was good to come away with a point, though. That's a good team out there. We beat them in the Christmas tournament down in Gloucester, and that was the last time they had lost, which was December 27th, I believe. So, you know, they've been on quite a roll, so it was good to get the point. And we ended up sticking around, and the Westfield Athletic Department got us tickets to the UMass BU game right after our game, so we stuck around and watched that, and the kids had a great time. In fact, our team manager, Danny Grant, got picked to go ride the Zamboni between periods, so he was thrilled. It was pretty good. It was a good time.
What did it feel like for you as you know, as a former player and now as the coach of these kids, to watch these kids on the ice at the Mullen Center? Because I haven't been to the Mullen Center, I think, since it was open. And, you know, you go up to U Lowell and you play in that rink, and it's just, you look around and you think, oh, this is just so cool. Was it a really good experience for the kids?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the kids definitely had a blast. And just seeing the level of play, you know, at that Division I college level is really an eye-opener for these kids.
Well, you know,
they definitely had a lot of fun.
It's funny. I watch your kids sometimes when they get to the rink a little early, and when Endicott is practicing, your kids will just ring the rink watching them. They'll stand around the rink watching Endicott practice, and I don't know, maybe pick up some pointers or get a little psyched on maybe how fast the game goes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the kids are always at the rink early for us, and, you know, once in a while we are on before or after Endicott, so the kids will stick around and watch them, and they're great. You know, they have some very talented players, so... some of our kids have ideas that they're going to go on and play at the next level, so it just goes to show them how hard they have to work to get to that level.
Okay, Justin, where are we now in terms of league play and what's left on the schedule and getting ready for the tournament?
We have one more game in our league. We play Winthrop on Wednesday night of this week down at their place, which is always a tough place to play. And then we finish up with Revere. So we only have two games left on our regular season schedule. So we're a bit ahead of the curve as far as that goes. So we're going to have a little bit of time between our last regular season game and our first tournament game. So, you know, we're going to have to find someone to scrimmage to keep our legs going, you know.
Yeah, how did you get the Westfield gig to go out there? I mean, I imagine to come into the tourney, they had to fill in a spot, you know, in the Gloucester Bank tournament, the Gloucester tournament. But how'd you get the return trip set up?
You know, we've played them quite a bit over the years.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not, and I've got to be friendly with their coach out there. I believe this is his last year. CB Matthews, he's been the coach for about at least 30 years, I'd say. So this is kind of like a farewell thing for him. He wanted to do a game at UMass, and he reached out to me in the summertime, and we were lucky enough to have a date available to do it.
That's terrific. Well, Coach, we'll check in again. I won't be doing your game this week. I don't know where I'm going to be. I could be there, but we're either going to be at the Bork or we're going to be up in Gloucester. But at any rate, we'll check in with you again probably next week if that's all right.
Sounds good, Rick. Thank you.
Thank you, Coach. Take care.
Thanks, Coach.
Guys, have a good night.
You too. That's Justin Scheres, who is the Beverly High School hockey coach. And great experience. I mean, you know what Lowell is like. That rink is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, the Mullins Center. The Arena.
Yeah, and the Mullins Center it's just great. And I remember seeing Dr. J play at the old cage when I was out there.
Yeah, I was going to say that the cage was historic.
So was Dr. J.
Yeah, you know, you only had him for 2 years. He left the legend.
He left as a sophomore, and I was a senior in his sophomore year, and he walked down to the court, and his fro was just out to here. But did he played above the rim in warm-ups, and it was just the most amazing thing. Such a cool guy, and, you know, just great story out there. But, yeah, good for the Beverly kids. That's awesome. Good for Coach Shears for doing that. Okay, what's up next here? I'm going to check the time. Okay, we're going to talk to Gary Larrabee at around 7:30, and let's see if we can get a hold of Coach Amin. I didn't make contact with him, but shall we surprise him?
Oh, he'll be surprised.
Okay, we'll see what happens, and if not, if that doesn't work, we'll be back. So you're listening to MSO News Sports, and this is North Shore Sports Night. So hang in there and be surprised.
The Institution for Savings has always believed in giving back to our communities because our communities are such great places to live and work. Last year alone, we donated and pledged more than $3.9 million to local nonprofits, including local hospitals, schools, food pantries, art organizations, and more. Named one of Boston Business Journal's top philanthropic companies, we are proud to be your local hometown bank. InstitutionForSavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
All right, we're back. We didn't get a hold of Coach Amin. We'll try again in a little while. And I did go skiing over the weekend. Went up to Mount Sunapee. It was 2 degrees. It got up to 2 degrees at the summit, 9 degrees at the base. No wind. Sunny day. It was perfect. And how many runs did I get? First thing, I almost got none in because when I paid the price of a senior ticket, I almost passed out right there. Holy rollies. What do you think the senior discount, with the senior discount, what do you think a lift ticket costs now at a place like Sunapee, which is kind of a small ski area?
$65, $70.
$74. Do you know what the price of a regular ticket is?
Probably $120.
It's $92. And it was, like, a year or two ago, it was $120 out in Aspen and Vail. So, boy, if we don't get some steady cold weather, those prices are not going to be affordable for this little guy eventually. But we skied from 8:15 to about 12:45, and it was only my second day on skis, and the guy I skied with is an extreme skier, but it was his first day. And our legs were spaghetti by 12:45, so we left pretty early, but it was a great ski day.
Good.
Lovely.
Good.
Love it cold up there.
I could take the cold. See, I would be a fireplace freak.
Oh, yeah. Well, we did go in quite a bit. My ski buddy was didn't really dress properly, and so we had to go in after every two or three runs. I'm fine after the first run. Once I get my fingertips warmed up.
Yeah, but Rick, Nanook of the North has nothing on you.
Oh, no. I go like an Apollo astronaut, but, you know, so does everybody else. You have to. You got to cover up. And
well, especially at the temperatures that you guys
experience. And you're going downhill. You're going downhill probably 30, 40 miles an hour. You got some wind resistance. It gets cold. And first run, my fingertips were just so cold, I could barely grip the poles. And then we did another run, I got better. And then we did a third run, he wanted to go in, he was freezing. But my hands had warmed up by that time. And after that, we had got a cup of hot chocolate, we skied. We'd go in every two or three runs, just at the top. You go in for about 5 or 10 minutes, stand by the fireplace, get warm, and head right back
out
again.
Down the bottom of the hill.
And then you go. You let gravity do its work.
That's right.
The problem was, I've never seen so many people there since probably... I don't know, a holiday 10, 15 years ago. It's funny because I went skiing a couple of weeks ago on a Thursday, and we had to quit by 1:45 because Neil Dineen and I, because there were no lines. I mean, you come back down, you go right back on the lift, come down, go where I go. It was just unbelievable. This time, by noontime, the lines were maybe a 15 or 20 minute wait.
Really?
So, yeah, it was just incredible. And I thought the cold would scare, it usually scares people away, but it didn't this time. Maybe because it was Super Sunday, Super Bowl weekend. I don't know. But it was great skiing. That was at Sunapee, and they're supposed to get more snow this week. And I'm looking forward to the Winter Olympics coming up. I think Michaela Schiff is the bee's knees. She's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I hope Lindsey Vonn does not get hurt. I love the downhill, the men's downhill, the women's downhill, the giant slalom, you know, all that stuff, the slalom.
Well,
I love it all.
You know, it's it's among the
Super G.
You know, the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. I mean, it's you know, the one of them is, which one is just straight downhill?
The downhill. That's what it's called. The downhill.
The downhill.
Franz Klammer, 1976.
Yeah, goes fast as you can go.
The greatest, the most exciting 2 minutes of sports I've ever seen on television.
He get up on that edge.
And he was just, his arms were flailing, and, you know, he's going to crash, he's going to crash, and he won.
If he's got to fall in two, but there's no way he can win because he's going to be blocking so much air resistance, just killing his time. But he never lost it.
Nope.
It was amazing. But, you know, the ability to continue to hit the gates and control the skis and maintain your body, your balance. And I mean, it's an amazing skill that these guys and girls possess. And, you know, his, you know, best of luck to all the Americans and that are competing. And, you know, good luck to all the competitors and everybody come out of there healthy.
My mother used to love to watch figure skating. I can't watch it, just like I can't watch gymnastics in the Summer Olympics. I can't watch it.
Well, but at least in skating, they got rid of the what part of it did they call it, where they had to do the mandatory, the figure, they go off and they basically, no one would see them.
The figures?
They would have to do the figure eights and all that stuff. The compulsories. Mm-hmm. They had to do the compulsory skates. Mm-hmm. They don't do those anymore.
Really?
Yeah. No, it's just straight out on the ice going crazy.
I can't watch it because I just, it's such a difficult sport like gymnastics that invariably, it's sort of like if you go out in the water enough, you're going to get seasick. If you skate enough or do gymnastics enough, you're going to fall.
Yeah.
And I just hate to see anybody fall at that level in the Olympics or the gymnastics.
And yet
so
many of them achieve near perfection.
Oh, I know.
There's no falling, and you go like, you know, I mean, the
I can't.
Daxels, the triple axels, the triple salchow, which I have no idea what.
Somebody does
is.
A quad. I think it's a Japanese men skater. I think he does a couple of quads. Yeah. And I just, how do you do that?
Oksaya Bayul, the French girl.
How do you do it on purpose?
Did the quadruple. She was the only girl in the world at the time that could do it, and unfortunately she had a very bad Olympic experience the year that she went. I heard an interview on NPR a couple of weeks back with her, and
speaking of that, have you noticed a voice that's noticeably absent from NPR? On Point?
Oh yeah, he's been gone for like 2 months.
And you know the story?
Well, there's the accusations.
Wow. That, I just read that. I just read, like, where is he? Where is he?
Yeah. Yeah, that came out, and he was off the air the next day. And
stunning.
The unfortunate thing is there's no day in court for these people before they're punished by their workplaces. And, you know, are the accusations true? Well, accusations are accusations until they're substantiated. And, you know, by right, you're having a right to face your accuser. And are these individuals having their day to face their accuser? You know, because the penalties that they're suffering are incredible. You know, Al Franken.
All except one.
Yeah, it's amazing that you know, the guy who goes out admits
to that,
to a behavior, you know, and there are 16 women that have come forward, and yet the Republicans see nothing wrong with that. The Christian right goes, oh well, we'll give him a mulligan like it's a friggin' golf tournament. You know, and yet Al Franken had to go because Al Franken was a bad man.
Al Franken went on his own. All right, here we go. We're going to take a break. We've got to get off this bus. We'll come back with Gary Larrabee. We'll be right back.
Fabulous Fridays and Sunday brunch are back at the Gloucester House. World-renowned for its lobster dishes and fresh seafood specialties, the Gloucester House Restaurant, 63 Rogers Street, uses only locally caught, fresh North Atlantic seafood, offering traditional dining as well as catering to your private function needs. There is something for everyone and every occasion at the Gloucester House. Owned and operated by the Linquata family since 1959, they offer fabulous Friday lunch and dinner specials. And don't forget Sunday brunch from 10 to 2. For more information, go to GloucesterHouse.com.
Okay, we're back with stand-up comedian Gary Larrabee now on North Shore Sports Night. Hey, Gary.
Good evening, man. How are we recovering the day after?
Well, like I was saying to Tim, I'm okay. They've given me 17 years of enjoyment every single Sunday. They're always earning it. And just watching Tom Brady give one of the performances of a lifetime yesterday in a losing effort, I'm okay. Philadelphia beat him. That's the name of the game.
You know, Gary, we've become sort of spoiled, and people can they're all crying and wailing and why we didn't win, but you can't win the Super Bowl unless you get to that game. And 10 times they've gotten to that game. They've been involved in, you know, 20% of the Super Bowls that have been held. And 20 years ago, we would never think that possible. But in the last 18 years,
it's true, Tim. That is true. But don't consider the first two Super Bowl appearances, which did drive us deliriously happy because we'd never experienced it before.
Right.
Don't put those two blowout losses in the same category as these last eight with Brady.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about how close they have come to being 8-0 in those games, or look at it from the other perspective, they could have been 0-8.
Yeah.
But they've won 5 out of 8, and then the three that they lost gave us major reason to go to our favorite prescription drug painkillers. They were heartbreaking losses like yesterday.
Yeah.
But as you say, I agree at the same time that they've given us one amazing run, and it's just a shame that a Brady performance like that could not go to waste, but go in the loss column. When you keep in mind that weird option pass play that he dropped, that was irrelevant to the big picture.
Agreed.
The big picture, as you guys know, and you've probably been talking about it, were the ineptness of the Patriots defense, which I give a backhanded slap in the face and a compliment to Belichick and Patricia for hiding that defensive unit's deficiencies for 16 games and then 2 playoff games before they played like a sieve yesterday.
Yeah, they really did. They looked more like game one of the season than game 17. They just couldn't come up with a start. They couldn't come up with a big play, a sack or a fumble and a recovery or a more critical interception. They just kept letting Philly respond to every time they scored. In the second half, Philly was able to come back and drive the ball and put points on the board and keep the pressure on them.
And when you think about it, this vaunted Philadelphia pass rush was held at bay pretty good.
Yeah.
For most of the game, but I'm still trying to look on the replay and see who broke down and who's me and...
Oh, it was Trey Mason.
Shaq
Mason, rather, the right guard.
Who tripped the ball out of Brady's hand, which you would never expect, and how ironic that Brady should fall victim to that after having, as Rick said, just an absolute career game that, he's just, put the quarterbacking position on a whole new pedestal in the league, and I don't think Foles will threaten any of his records, but everybody else will be shooting for them probably for the next 50 years.
You know, I was telling Rick earlier, at the end of the game last night, Vegas already set the betting line for next year, for next year's Super Bowl. Who's favored to win?
I saw that too. Our own Patriots.
Patriots. Right. They just lost the Super Bowl. And they're already favored to win next year. The expectation is so high that this team is just going to come back out, deliver again, win the win the AFC East, win the conference, go to the Super Bowl, and challenge once again.
Well, it's easy to put those odds up now, but look and see what happened when the Patriots lost those two heartbreakers to the Giants. And I believe the same thing happened. They were still the team to beat. It just is another tribute to Belichick and Brady, and I think more to Brady when you think about what we have to put up with Belichick's bizarre trading of great players when they seem to be still at a high peak of performance, like Seymour and Mankins and Collins, and Jones.
And Ty Law.
And, today, and Brady played so great all year without his at least number two, if not number one, favorite receiver.
Yeah.
Answer me this question, guys. When is Brandon Cooks ever going to realize when you catch a ball in traffic, you don't try to look for a direction to run? you look for a direction to hit the ground before the train hits you.
Yeah, yeah, because there were already two guys circling him, and while he's looking for an alleyway, and he had no clue that guy was coming.
He
none
hasn't
whatsoever.
Watched of Amendola this year, or even Hogan.
Yeah.
To know that there's a real way of avoiding getting injured, and when you're playing that position,
well, that's,
you're in
you know,
traffic, and that bird brain hasn't learned it even after playing with those guys for 18 games.
You know, I think they've learned it from Edelman, because you watch Edelman, he catches it, he'll get as much as he can, and then he simply balls up and hits the dirt.
And the other two guys do that as well, and for Cooks not to have done that last night, in my estimation, was inexcusable. And, because a lot of things they did last night were inexcusable, but it's also an amazing testament to the program, guys, to the Patriots program, how they have so much for that we must talk about after their wins or their losses in the Super Bowl. You can write not just a book, you can write volumes on the scenarios and the way these games emerged and the setting for these games. These eight Super Bowls, the Patriots, someone's going to write a book on it, I'm sure. The Patriots and the Super Bowl in the 21st century, because it has been just, I mean, every game has been an epic.
Yep.
And every game has had a million things to talk about post-haste.
Gary.
And here we go last night, one of the greatest games in the history of the Super Bowl again.
Oh, yeah.
Last year was the greatest comeback.
Right.
You thought the game 3 years ago against Seattle was the greatest comeback, and we just keep going on and on. I think we just have to ride with it, like you say, and enjoy it as long as we can. And I'm convinced more than ever that Brady is the man behind this franchise and was the man behind the success. And in some cases, they have won despite Belichick. I'm not going to put Belichick. I'm taking him off his pedestal after what he did last night and what he's been doing with this franchise and taking chances and getting lucky and dumping these frontliners, and he just gave up on Butler. Whenever that story is, we're going to get the truth will come out. Butler wasn't afraid to talk about it last night, and he indicated he had no idea why he was benched, and it's really a very sad part of the story.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw online tonight, too, that the four captains all knew he wasn't playing before the game.
Wow.
Yeah,
they had been informed he wasn't playing, but not given, you know, any kind of rationale for it.
Yeah, we've condoned and accepted everything that Belichick has done all these years because he's just put together such a fantastic program and a dynasty which he has. But I mean, for what Brady did last night and almost saved the day for Butler and for Alex Reamer. Among others, Brady is just amazing.
He was. Right. You know, the thing is, I shudder to think what yesterday's game would have been like without him. But I want to ask you, Gary, historically, this will be my last Patriots question, but I get this feeling that we're living in an age like sports fans did when Babe Ruth was playing, because you had Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and all these great record setters, Honus, Wagner, Ty Cobb, and all these guys. And in that era, Babe Ruth stood head and shoulders above everybody else. Here we've got, you know, you got Peyton Manning, you've got Eli Manning, you've got Drew Brees,
and
Aaron Rodgers, and you've got all these tremendous athletes and these guys who win big. And then you've got Tom Brady, and I just feel like, God, we're lucky to be. I mean, if you're any kind of a sports fan, this is amazing.
I agree, and we see it with the greats in hockey, the greats in basketball. You know, Jordan to James to who knows, and you can make the case in every sport. This is in many ways the golden age of American professional sports. In so many ways, and you make a very good point, Rick, and I agree with you 1,000%.
All right, so where do you want to go now? I'm going to let Tim is prepared to talk golf, Gary, so can we go to that?
Sure. You know, we're getting another week closer. We're only 8 weeks away, 9 weeks away, 8 weeks away from the Masters.
Wow.
And that's something to look forward to. That we could thankfully we've gotten out of January, but we saw yesterday, Tim, and I'm sure you saw it too, we had a fourth sudden-death playoff in as many weeks on the tour, on the Pro Tour, and a very little-known but well-recognized and well-respected player on the tour, Gary Woodland, boy, he's got a great first name, won the playoff at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, played before like 69,000 spectators yesterday in a record week-long crowd of, I don't know, 500,000 or something in that golf course in Scottsdale. And Woodland is arguably one of the four or five longest hitters on the PGA Tour. I think very few people know that. After you look at Dustin Johnson, everybody else is second. But Gary Woodland is a great long, long player who can hit it a mile. And he proved once again that you can combine extraordinary distance with the rest of your game to beat a good but not great field at the Waste Management Open.
You know, Gary, here's an interesting statistic. For the weekend, they drew nearly three-quarters of a million spectators. On Saturday alone, they drew 216,818 people to that particular day's round of golf, the biggest in golf history.
You believe those numbers, though, Tim? Come on.
Hey, it's ESPN. It's like Fox News. You know.
Yeah, I don't know where they get these numbers every year. I don't know how anyone can fit that many spectators on a golf course, but I guess the PGA Tour approved that number, so they're using it. But yeah, it shows that golf still has a future. But Gary Woodland has won a few other times on the tour, and I think he has not reached his potential. But maybe he's tuning up for something big this year. And as we have said so many times before, even though we look for Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day to be the big stars every week, there are plenty of other guys who can play as well. You know, a lot of the big names don't play Waste Management, not just because of a place on the schedule, but they do not like the way the tournaments run and the way the galleries are allowed to do maybe a little bit above and beyond how they should be behaving. There was no great players in that field. Fowler was in the field and slipped the last day. Mickelson, of course, didn't play too bad.
No, I've seen that, yeah.
Finished top 10. But now we move on, I think, this week to, I believe it's Los Angeles, is that right? Is it the Genesis Open this week? Is it Pebble Beach? I think Pebble Beach is next week, I believe.
Yeah, I think this is the I think Tiger's coming back for this one.
Tiger's back this week, yeah. Which should be great, and hopefully our own local Rob Oppenheim will be in the field after he finished top 10 last year, his best finished ever on the PGA Tour, and he's gotten off to a lousy start with another year of his PGA Tour card, and hopefully he'll have magic again this week at Riviera like he did last year.
You know, for the general public that watches the tour, Gary, as opposed to the real aficionados, but for like the guys that turn in, oh, who's Golf Channel's on, you know, the names Gary Woodland, Chez Reve, and also, you know, some of the others that got mentioned in the article who finished up in the top 10, Ollie Schneiderjan, Brendan Steele, Chesson Hadley, you know, it's like, who the heck are these guys? And this seems like the kind of a tournament where these guys have the opportunity to put their game on display. You know, you still had a Phil, you still had a Fowler. The guy who I was trying to think of last week, and we were trying to figure out who might stand out, Bryson DeChambeau. I remember him from last year. This, the name and his look just looked like some kind of a new personality on the tour that might make a move.
He did last year. He showed some of that magic last year. Of course, I believe he's the player who began the approach of making all of his clubs the same length. So the driver is the same length as a 9-iron, which seems odd that they would have the same length shaft. But I believe he's the one who's doing that. I forget the reasoning behind it, but it seems to be quite effective for him.
All right, Gary, do we you want to mention your thoughts on either the Bruins or the Celtics or both?
Let's face it, guys. We're living in a paradise right now. The Bruins are looking great. They may be a 1 or 2 seed come the playoff time if they can keep this up. But it's a great story with the new coach, even though he got his feet wet at the end of last year. It's a great story, obviously, with those guys. And, of course, the Celtics are a great story almost every night as well, dealing with the Kyrie Irving injury and the emergence of Mike Rozier. What's Rozier's first?
Terry Rozier. Terry,
right?
Yeah.
The wonderful point guard off the bench who's become a star with two phenomenal games last week and a so-so game, but they pulled off another dramatic win yesterday without some of their best players, and all this talk about Marcus Smart maybe being dealt, but Ainge and Brad Stevens are continuing to pull the right strings. Ainge getting the right players, and they just signed this big guy to a $5 million
right.
contract for the rest of the year. They need a big, big guy to cover some space in the middle, and hopefully this guy, is it Greg Moore? Is that his name, guys?
I think that's it. Morris? It's either Moore or Morris, but yeah.
We have Morris already, so I think it's Moore. But, I mean, we got so much to look forward to. This team is going to be a factor in the playoffs without our star, who's still hurting with the broken ankle or whatever. And
we need a duck boat parade, so yeah, I think you're right.
I'll tell you, that cheap shot that Kyrie Irving took in that game a couple of nights back, he got the hip checked. In that thigh muscle, and it looked so deliberate, you know, as he was trying to get around, and the guy's trying to stop him. I'm just thinking, that was nasty. That should have been a technical foul. Because he came up limping right away.
Nothing's happening about it, so.
Nope.
But the point I want to make before we wrap up, guys, is the fact, if you remember the game they played in at Golden State a couple of weekends ago.
Yep.
That's the game by which I am measuring this team right now, and they can compete with Golden State as long as they get their regular group back, and they'll get Hayward back when they get Hayward back, probably not until next September. But what this team has done without Hayward is just extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And this team can play with Cleveland. Obviously, they're five games up on Cleveland. They're one game up in the glass column with Toronto. And they are fulfilling a lot of the prophecies, the predictions at the beginning of the season, with a healthy Hayward. They're doing it without a healthy Hayward. So much to look forward to. We're so fortunate. We give up on the Pats after last night, and we get so much more to look forward to. And then we've got the two-time Atlantic Division champion Red Sox getting going again.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, another divisional flag to hang up there.
All right.
Living the good life, guys.
I love this kind of talk, Gary. Hey, listen, stay warm. We'll talk to you again next week if you're up for it.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, right, Gary. The great Gary Larrabee on MSO News Sports, a sports historian, a golf writer, but you know, Tim, for years he covered both the Celtics and the Red Sox, and the Celtics and the Bruins, excuse me. And Grenier also, Mike Grenier also covering both, but primarily, I think Grenier was, I forget who was hockey and who was who. I don't remember, but they both covered everything. So
I would say Mike being the hockey guy, the fanatic that he is.
Yeah, okay, all right. So we're going to talk to the Danvers hockey coach in just a minute and kind of wrap this thing up. This is North Shore Sports Night. We'll be back.
Ever wish that help with your business was as nearby as your next-door neighbor? At Cape Ann Savings Bank, we're the folks who have helped our neighbors build prosperous communities since 1846. And we invite you to give us a call, discuss your vision, and learn how we can help you grow your business. We're here for you. You have questions. We have answers. Just give us a call, 888-283-CASB, or visit capeannsavingsbank.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
All right, we're back with Steve Baldessari, the Danvers High School hockey coach. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How you been?
Good. Coach, you know, we did the game the other night against Bevlin, and I have to tell you, you are the epitome of sartorial splendor behind the bench. I think the only guy who could outdo you was Don Cherry.
was he your role model, Steve?
No.
Come on, come out with that plaid jacket. We know you've got it somewhere.
No.
I really like Don Cherry, but he wasn't a role player.
I got you. Well, I'm glad to hear that, and that's pretty cool. Oh, my goodness. So, Coach, let's go back to that game. We were just talking with Coach Scherz a little while ago, and you guys, it was a really heavyweight battle, I think, between two really good teams, but you guys found an opening in that third period, and you capitalized on it. So, just go over that game with me a little bit before you talk about Saturday's game.
Yeah, well, we knew it was going to be an emotional game. You know, I think we talked last time about all the reasons why, so I won't get into all that. But, you know, our players did a pretty good job in the first period. We did bury pucks in that first period when I think we're up one zip. We had the penalty shot where Connor Pertel hit the post. Then we had another two or three pretty good opportunities. So we didn't really bury pucks. You know, I'm not going to say we could have put a team away there, but we could have extended that lead a little bit in the first. And, you know, the second period was very similar to our second period at Winthrop the other night, where we, you know, we got ourselves caught in the penalty box and kind of took the flow away from us a little bit. But you know, we dealt with that. We got over that. And then in the third period, that Beverly game, I think our guys really realized that, you know, they were playing hard, but there was more room. There was more room for improvement. And, you know, and I think we really took over in that third and played a good third, you know. But credit Beverly, they, you know, we get up by two. They didn't give up either. You know what I mean? And they came back and, you know, we had a little bit of a mishap in front of our net, which has kind of been something we've been focusing on, our net front coverages. You know, they made it 4-3, but, you know, it was good to get out of there with a win, you know, moved on and had a nice win the other night against Winthrop, and, you know, we're waiting to go Wednesday night against Saugus at Kazabuski, which is always tough for us.
Coach, you know, I mentioned it to Coach Chairs that Beverly played a really good defensive game. They just kept swarming the man with the puck, causing a lot of interrupted passes throughout the ice, especially in center ice. And they did it first period, second period, were able to get the lead. Third period started out the first couple minutes. Then all of a sudden, it's like the whole ice just opened up for you guys. And you put the skating ability and the speed to good use, and you popped in those go-ahead goals. And then it seemed to close up again. But that one window of opportunity, you guys really took advantage of.
Well, we had a little adjustment with our neutral zone breakout going into the third period, and you know, we kind of took them away a little bit from what they were doing. And you know, one of the things that we really strive to improve on is our in period adjustments. And you know, they really did a good job going to that third period, and that opened up things for us. And you know, that got their D a little bit, a little push back, which opened up the neutral zone a little bit, had him standing around a little bit. We took advantage of that.
Coach, Dave Curley, who's a volunteer assistant for Gloucester High School, he's also the Rockport High School soccer coach, he was there scouting both schools for Gloucester, and he was mentioning how aggressive your forwards are. And I want to ask you, how long does it take, or how do kids get to know each other as well as your first line does? Because, you know, I was talking, I asked Connor Pertell about that, and he always knows where the other guys are, and they know where he is. It's sort of instinctive. But that being said, that's offense. But you guys also have that coming out of your own zone. So how do they get that? How long do they have to work together to get that? Is, you know, that kind of chemistry? And is that common in high school to have that in a line that's so solid?
Yeah, you know, and in that, we actually broke up that line. In the first two periods, Nicky DeShula was was originally a center. And in the Marblehead game, when Connor Patel was under the weather and couldn't play, we moved Nick back to center, and we moved up Jared Massiz. And Jared Massiz has just been great to see him grow over the last couple of years. And, you know, he's one of the, you know, I would say one of the top power forwards in the league, and I wanted to put him up there with Connor and Tom and see if, you know, by putting Nick back down, who's kind of a real grind and go-getter, you know, who makes, you know, D turn pucks over, and put him with Tyler Busker and Cal Mansfield, pretty similar players. We want to just see, you know, if that combination would work a little bit. You know, most of the time you don't want to interrupt things when they're going well, you know, but when we had, like I said, when we had Connor sit, you know, we kind of saw a few things, you know, that we liked, and, you know, we talked it over for a couple days, and, you know, we put it together. But, you know, after I would say about halfway through the second period, I could just tell they just weren't working well together. And, you know, so we went back in the third period by moving Nicky back up, and you know, and you saw what they can do.
Yeah.
You know, they've known their friends and their buddies, and they've been playing together for a while, and, you know, they really feed off each other. They really communicate well with each other in practice, and when they're off the ice and drill, you know, with drills or when we're in the game, they're, you know, they're constantly talking to each other about, you know, I could have done this, I should have that, you know, you go here, I'll go there. So they communicate really well with each other. And, you know, I know Connor and Tom have been playing together for a while, and, you know, so, you know, that's the experience piece to our team this year. You know, those guys for the last 2 years have earned it, and they're doing a good job putting up good numbers.
Well, when you say you like to see how Massiz has grown, he's a big boy. You got some big guys on that team.
He's an outstanding athlete, and, you know, just his maturity level you know, from his freshman year to last year to this year. I mean, he's now a leader on our team. You know, he's constantly, you know, speaking up in practice. A couple times in the locker room, where, you know, Jared would never really say too much. You know, and he's really grown. And, you know, I wanted to see how he would do up there. You know, we have a package that we use in certain times of the game where we do bump Jared up, and we move Nick back on D. We've used it a few times this year, not too much, but we wanted to see how they would do together, you know, Jared with Connor and Tom, you know, on a consistent basis in a game. And, you know, it wasn't like it was bad or anything. It just, you know, yeah. You could just kind of see that they weren't used to playing with each other a little bit. And, you know, like you said, they didn't know what each other was going to do.
How many generations of the Massiz family athletes are there in Danvers?
Oh, there's a whole bunch out there. There's a whole bunch. Dad Mike was a great player at Danvers back in the mid-'80s, went on to Fitchburg State. He was at Fitchburg before I got there. So, you know, and I know his aunts and his uncles and a big hockey family, his grandfather, all of them.
I love it. Well, Coach, you mentioned you got, one more league game?
Yeah, Wednesday night at Saugus, and then we have... got a slew of non-league games. We got Gloucester and Masco and Tewksbury and Chelmsford and St. John's and North Reading. So we got a fun February ahead of us.
All right, we'll be there for some of those. I know you're on the road for those, and it's a great story, and you're tuning up for the playoffs. So we'll talk again. And meantime, Coach, thanks for taking the time again tonight, and we'll see you in a week or so.
Great to hear from you guys. Take care.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach. Best of luck.
Steve Baldessari, the Danvers High School hockey coach.
Yes, and he was, you know, nattily attired for the game, and, you know, he's got the water bottles lined up along the boards behind himself, and just such a professional look.
Great guy.
About him and his staff, and it kind of reflects off the plays, the attitude that the plays have, too.
You know, I love talking to all the coaches. This is really the first year I've done this much, because Bill and I used to split it, and Bill always did the interviews, but meeting these coaches, all of them, and I regret that we haven't talked with Dale Dunbar yet, and we haven't talked with the Rockport hockey coach yet, but hopefully that will take care of itself. And again, I don't know if we're going to be doing the Beverly game on Wednesday or if we'll be doing the Gloucester game on Wednesday. I'm just not sure yet, but talking to these guys, the passion they have for it, and the thing that I think is often missed is sometimes in many cases, they practice 5 a.m., or they practice 9:30 p.m., and they get the kids to do it. The kids love it. The parents have to go through it. It's a great story, and, you know, you want to see all the teams have success. I know Peabody is going to rebound. I know those kids, all those freshmen and sophomores, and if they're, you know, the upperclassmen, they're going to rebound. They're going to be back because Coach Leonard is a terrific coach, but I hate to see the disparity sometimes that the bottom dwellers, bottom feeders sometimes get. And that happens. I mean, there's cycles.
Exactly. You cycle through. For certain teams, for teams like Danvers, they just seem to reload every year. They've got kids coming up. But that points to a really good development program, not so much in the high schools anymore because there are no, you know, JV, there are no middle school programs anymore. But mainly it's the community that's putting in the programs where the kids are playing and they're learning to play with each other. And Danvers, a lot of the kids in Danvers stay in Danvers. And so they're growing up and they're playing in leagues outside leagues together. And then they go and that's fresh and they're all massing along, you know, the blue line for the first day of tryouts, you know, for the hockey team. And so it continually feeds the program. You know, so, you know, and for other schools, sometimes that is that thing of cycling. You're going to get a really strong class, and then you may have two strong classes, and then, you know, you take your lunch for a couple of years, and then your third and fourth year, you make some hay, but then you might cycle back again.
And all credit to the kids, the parents, the coaches, in all sports. But hockey is particularly, I think, gruesome because of those cold rinks.
Well, yes, because of the.
I'm talking about the parents, you know, supporting the kids. And
most schools don't have. Most schools do not have their own rinks per se. Gloucester is very lucky that, you know, they have, you know, the O'Malley and the Talbot, you know, that they can that they practice at basically when they want the ice. You know, so it's very comfortable for those coaches, but for other teams that don't have, you know, a home rink to speak of, you know, you've got to book the ice time when you can get it, and you're right, it is at all hours of the day.
Yeah, and I just think of All the, I mean, you know how I freeze. I'm on other, you know, it's just, I just shake my head. And, you know, we used to skate when we had these pickup games. I remember Gordon College, we used to skate at Gordon, which used to have an outdoor rink right by 128 there.
Yeah, I remember.
And it was great if you were skating one way, the wind was at your back when it's 0 degrees, but going back the other way, and it was like, what the bozo? Oh, my word. So, good. It's all good. Check our website. We'll let you know what the schedule is going to be. Bill Newell covering basketball. I'll be covering. Well, Bill covers everything. But we should have a game.
He's like wallpaper.
Well done. Well done. Yes, he is. I'm not sure. He'll appreciate that, but I get it.
Listen, for all the crap that I take from you and him.
For me?
Yeah,
me.
You too. Yeah. You
petite one.
Don't
I think,
even try to be Mr. Innocent.
I think not and disappeared. Coach, I don't know how you can say that.
It's a good thing I was blessed with broad shoulders. Yes, a strong back.
And you're tall.
Yeah.
And you're tall. You can carry it all. You can carry the load. Yes, you can.
And you guys keep testing the limit.
We do. As long as we don't kick you in the knee. Okay.
Yeah, don't stay away from the knees.
Staying away from the knees. Okay.
From the knees.
All right, Coach, thanks. I appreciate it. And, you know, we'll recover. Patriot Nation will recover. And,
hey,
you know.
You finished number two. So you go back to the drawing board.
But you made a great point. You can't win the Super Bowl if you don't get there. So.
You know, how many teams would love to be there?
Sure.
Eight times in the first 18 years
you
of
got
this
it.
Century.
You got it. All right, that's Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer. Bill Proposky, of course, always backed up by the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell. I'm Rick Moore. This is North Shore Sports Night. Bye-bye.